These are massively complex systems in our companies today, in many cases are half a century old, that don't even have a shot at solving that kind of problem. And now we're bringing that to mass scale instantaneously using Gen AI. It's game change. That's what's going on.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Ausgabe von Handelsblatt Disrupt, dem Podcast über neue Ideen, Disruption und die Zukunft der digitalen Welt. Mein Name ist Sebastian Mattes und ich begrüße Sie wie immer ganz herzlich aus unserem Podcaststudio hier in Düsseldorf. Heute sprechen wir hier im Podcast mit einem Mann, der sicherlich einer der bekanntesten Manager der weltweiten Technologieszene ist. Der Amerikaner Bill McDermott. Bis vor 5 Jahren war er CEO bei SAP, da habe ich ihn selbst auch mal getroffen und gesprochen. Heute ist er der Chef von ServiceNow, einer Cloud-Computing-Plattform mit Sitz in Kalifornien, mit der Unternehmen manuelle und veraltete Arbeitsweisen durch digitale ersetzen können. Was genau ServiceNow macht, vor allem aber, was er alles vorhat, das erzählt Bill McDermott gleich meinem Kollegen Stefan Scheuer im Silicon Valley. Es sei aber jetzt schon erwähnt, dass McDermott dabei einen Superlativ nach dem anderen verwendet und dass er davon überzeugt ist, dass sein Unternehmen ServiceNow mit Hilfe von generativer KI, also Gen AI, wie er sagt, das letzte i-Tüpfelchen auf die digitale Transformation für kleine und größere Unternehmen überall auf der Welt setzen wird. Naja, wir werden sehen, ob das dann alles so hinhaut. Jedenfalls, wie Bill McDermott das erreichen will, wie er es über einen kleinen Lebensmittelladen zu einem der Top-CEOs in der internationalen Tech-Welt gebracht hat, was er über SAP denkt und warum er davon überzeugt ist, dass generative KI das Beste ist, was Firmen und Konsumenten je passieren konnte. Das hören wir jetzt gleich im Gespräch mit Bill McDermott und Stefan Scheuer.
Nach einer kurzen Unterbrechung geht es gleich weiter. Bleiben Sie dran.
Wie wird unsere Wirtschaft eigentlich klimaneutral? Das ist eine der wichtigsten Fragen unserer Zeit. Und das Erste, was wir dafür loswerden müssen, sind auf jeden Fall fossile Denkweisen. In der Handelsblatt Green Innovation Week dreht sich deshalb vom 6. bis zum 10. Mai alles darum, wie die Klimawende gelingen kann. Und welche nachhaltigen Entscheidungen Sie jetzt für sich und Ihr Unternehmen treffen können. Seien Sie dabei. Digital, im Blatt, als Podcast und live. Mehr unter handelsblatt.com/greeninnovationweek.
Und damit kommen wir jetzt zu dem Gespräch von Stefan Scheuer mit Bill McDermott, dem CEO von ServiceNow. Viel Spaß.
Hello, Bill.
Hello, Stefan.
Thank you so much for taking the time. Bill, we want to talk about where you are looking at business-wise now, but we also want to take the opportunity to understand a little bit better where you come from. Behind you, you have your Winner's Dream book lying. Actually, in preparation for our talk, I peeked into the book. I can't promise that I read the whole thing, but there were a couple of things that did strike me. So one of them is you were born in Long Island. You grew up there, and already at the age of 16, you started your own delicatessen business. Mm-hmm. Why? How do you come up with that idea?
Well, I was trading in 3 part-time jobs for 1 full-time job. So while being a teenage entrepreneur might sound like a highly skilled thing to do, it was more practical than anything else, where I could consolidate all my working hours into one endeavor. And I was very excited to do that because I had some experience working there. So buying that store just made my life a lot easier.
But it's a big step for a 16-year-old.
It's a big step. They are all big steps when you look at them in isolation, but they're building blocks. You know, I think the idea of IQ has been somewhat overstated in the world, and the idea of EQ has been somewhat understated in the world, meaning I had 550 customers come in and out of that store a day, and you have to understand each one in a highly personalized way to make them happy so they come back again. And that always stuck with me as the DNA force of progress, to love your customers, to take great care of them, and make sure they remain loyal so they come back again. Back in that day, it was a very interesting situation because I had to solve problems that the big competitors I faced were either unwilling or structurally unable to do. For example, there was a senior citizen complex not too far from the store, and both my large competitor Finest Supermarkets and 7-Eleven, neither one delivered, so we delivered. And the blue-collar workers would be flush rich on Friday night and dead broke by Saturday evening. So I gave them credit, and they always paid me back. But the hard part was getting those kids to walk a block and a half past 7-Eleven to come to my store. And I went down to the store one day at 7-Eleven. I said, why are you all waiting online out here when there's a big store in there? And they said, well, they think we're going to take things. And I said, don't worry about all that. Follow me down to my store. And by then, I had built a video game room on the side of the store with Asteroids and Pac-Man. And at the time, kids were plucking those quarters in at record clip. And I said, man, you know, the guy that owned the games, I just said, I can't afford to buy you games, but I'll split the quarters with you. And at the end of a long day, one of the young people said, Bill, when we want to have good food and get treated with respect and play video games, we come to your store. And when we want to steal stuff, we go to 7-Eleven. And that was really a great moment in observing human nature. And that's why I said in my book, When Is Dream, trust is the ultimate human currency. And when you give trust, you tend to get a lot of it back.
So in how far did you implement that in the rest of your career then?
I implemented that in every stretch of my career. You know, I put myself through college on the back of that delicatessen and then went to work for Xerox Corporation in New York City.
Which is also an interesting story. I read about the water flooding your home on the day of the interview.
Yeah.
And your brother carrying you to make sure that the suit stayed dry.
Yeah. Back then, we lived in a 1,100 square foot home, and it was built on a concrete slab, and it had a canal in the backyard. And every time there was a northeast storm, the house flooded. And that day, there was about 4 feet of water in the downstairs of the house. And I had just purchased my $99 suit from the mall. So my brother carried me to the car out in the street where my dad was going to drive me to the railroad tracks so I didn't get my suit wet. And that went really well. So my dad took me to the railroad tracks. And as I was getting out of the car, I guaranteed my dad I'd have my employee badge in my pocket when I got back to Amityville that night.
And you delivered on that promise.
I delivered on that promise, not because it was easy, but because it was a challenge. You know, I got on the railroad that day reading the annual report of Xerox and then CEO David Kearns reinventing the company on something they called total quality management back then. And as I was riding in that train getting into New York, I realized my real dream was to be the next David Kearns. But I was a little young for that, so I had to go for that sales job with everything I had. And, you know, I realized when I got to Top of the Sixes, which was one of the real prestigious buildings in New York in that era, right on Fifth Avenue, and I looked around at these incredible young people from the most prestigious Ivy League schools, and I was thinking to myself for a moment there, hey, I might have overshot a little bit with my dad. This looks like a pretty talented group. But I had to go with my superpower, which was basically people and having conversations with people. And when I asked the young people that were also interviewing for the job what they were there for, they would tell me things like, well, you know, I'm playing the field, I'm interviewing at Morgan Stanley and IBM and J.P. Morgan, or, you know, maybe at that time it was also Burroughs and some other ones. And after listening to enough of that, I realized it was going to be my day. And it was going to be my day because I wanted it so much more than they wanted it. And that's what really gave me my superpower. My desire was absolutely my strength and always has been.
From then, fast forwarded, you were responsible for Puerto Rico, the then probably most difficult region that Xerox was covering. And yeah. You performed really well. You were the youngest, I think it was at age 36, member of the executive board. And from there on, you just, with a couple of steps in between, joined SAP.
Yeah.
How was that, joining SAP? Why SAP at the time?
I loved it. At the time, SAP, which obviously is a very prestigious and great company, had not had great success in the Americas, and in fact had 5 CEOs in 6 years. And it was really the fledgling operation of SAP globally, and it kept missing its plan. I think it missed its plan 25 out of 26 quarters, and that's not good. So to my surprise, actually, SAP was quite humble about that and wanted to get a leader in there. At that time, SAP America was a wholly owned subsidiary of SAP, and the job was CEO of SAP America. And I had interviewed with the executive board of SAP and ultimately with the founder of SAP, and had a delightful meeting with all of them. And I realized that the culture of SAP was very much in tune with mine. SAP at the time was a highly innovative, customer-centric company that had a great desire to win, and they were looking for a leader. And they weren't looking for a leader to mail the playbook to. They were looking for a leader that could write the playbook and actually create a masterpiece. And fortunately for both SAP and myself, it all worked out pretty well.
Not only in the US, but then also for SAP as global CEO. You've been one of the most influential CEOs, not only in the German business world, but in Europe for 1.5 decades. How do you look back at this time? It's been about 4 years since you left SAP.
Yeah, it's going on 5 now. I really do look back on it with a lot of gratitude. I appreciate the opportunity to serve. I appreciate the business that we built, 100,000 employees and more than $30 billion in revenue. And, as CEO, we more than tripled the revenues of the company and the profits of the company. But more than that, we tenfolded the number of customers. And I'm just really proud of all the valuation benefits that we also gave to shareholders, much more than 3 times the shareholder value of the company. So I look at all that with great pride. And at the same time, I really love Germany. And I appreciate the fact that I was probably the least likely to be accepted by Germany, because stylistically, probably I'm more American than most people. But I think that Germany actually appreciated the authenticity of it all, because I just was who I am. And I think that no matter where you go in the world, if you just yourself and you're consistently just who you are, people will give you a great chance. And for that, I'm always grateful to Germany, and will always consider it a second home.
Why did you leave?
Well, I had almost 10 years as CEO. I was there 17 years. And it's interesting because I was at Xerox, which was my first love in my career, for 17 years. So I think to some extent, every 17 years, I get the 17-year itch, And I felt like I was due for another 5-year renewal at SAP, and it was SAP's intent to renew my contract for another 5 years. And it was honestly my intent to renew that contract. But I got to the point where there were a lot of offers coming my way after 10 years as CEO and 17-year career at SAP. And frankly, I always think that there's a time to come and there's also a time to go. And I felt like I really wanted to experience something different, on a personal basis, which was no slight to SAP whatsoever. I was ready for a new adventure. And I also felt that, we had a couple of people on the executive board that would do a great job. And we were coming off of an unbelievable quarter. And I had a chance to do something for another company that I felt could be the defining one of the 21st century. And therefore, I felt all the pieces were in place, a very successful SAP, a well-planned out succession, and ultimately my opportunity personally to go in a new direction or a new adventure for this leg of my professional career. And I really do think it was, in every way, a very positive thing for all participants at that time. We all made that decision together.
You're leading ServiceNow. We're here in your headquarters under the beautiful California sun. As a lot of people might have heard the name of the company, but not everybody knows on what you're doing. So what does ServiceNow do?
Yeah, ServiceNow is the intelligent platform for end-to-end digital transformation. If you think about the ERP world, which most people, especially in Germany, understand well, in the 20th century architectures, there was operating systems, there was databases, and there was applications. And what you learned in that era is all those technologies were very good, but they were primarily focused on departmental computing, applications that were built for finance or applications that were built for HR, or later on applications that were built for CRM. What ServiceNow does is it applies an automation layer above the last half century of complexity. And it enables companies with one gorgeous consumer-grade user experience to seamlessly integrate into all of those departmental systems to execute across the enterprise, very much in the end-to-end digital transformation concept. So if you're thinking of things in terms of IT becoming the business strategy, you have to manage your assets, you have to service the business, you have to manage your operations, you have to secure your operations, you have to observe what's going on from the factory all the way through to the foxhole, from development all the way through to the retail checkout. You have to secure your operations in a regulatory and a compliance and an ESG sense. So that's the technology side. But then there's the employee experience. Today, employees swivel chair on average between 13 different applications in a given day. They forfeit 33% of their productivity swivel chairing between applications that were built in some cases a half century ago. Doesn't make a lot of sense. So we give one consumer-grade experience to the employee from recruiting, hiring, onboarding, training, providing all the services, including offboarding, by the way, all on the mobile with a great consumer-grade experience. Game change. And then on the customer side, you know, there once was a time where customer relationship management was about selling people something and getting their wallet. And then they said upsell and cross-sell and market to them and keep them loyal. And that was really a front office function. But in the world of mass customization and personalization, the customer doesn't want to be handled. They want to serve themselves at their leisure, on their time cycle. And they expect a company to be able to function in a frictionless way, in a touchless way, so they can digitally interact with the company. And then they want the mid office and the back office to keep the front office promise, meaning right product, right price, right form factor, perfectly delivered, and done so in a way that's flawless. And if there is a mistake, there's a recovery process that's flawless. This is what I call end-to-end digital transformation in the customer relationship. And that's what we do. And then finally, you know, if you think about tech today, most companies have literally hundreds, if not thousands, of engineers, depending on the industry that they're in. How do we enable engineers to innovate, to create a great future, to invent? Well, text to code, text to workflow automation, text to new app development is what we do. And the best part of all this, Stefan, we do everything I just said on one common platform, perfectly integrated, organically built, and designed for the 21st century challenges, not the 20th century challenges. And that's why it's been the fastest growing enterprise software company at this stage of our development of all time. In fact, it's one of only five companies in enterprise software to be on the doorstep of $10 billion in revenue. None of them did it organically except us. And at the same time, none of them were growing at our rate with our margin and profitability profile at this stage of our development either. So we think that we really will fulfill my dream to create the defining enterprise software company of the 21st century.
Let's break the product down. If I got it correctly, the basis for ServiceNow was especially IT management, mm-hmm. where you had people working with different types of software. I don't know, somebody calls and says, my PC isn't working. And then somebody has to fix it, but he has to jump between, as you mentioned, five different pieces of software. And he has to juggle between, I don't know, different hardware specifications.
Right.
So ServiceNow came in and provided a platform to integrate all of that.
Right.
That was what made ServiceNow so special, right?
That's correct. But it's not only the integration. It is also the new app development on top of this common platform. So what we were best known for in IT migrated into the employee experience, into the customer experience, and then into the creator experience. All of these businesses have spawned multiple vectors. Right now, we're looking at 11 businesses that will be billion plus software businesses on one common platform. What makes that unique is we maintain one platform, one architecture, and one data model to solve some of the world's most difficult challenges, all with a gorgeous user experience. Most of the 20th century software, even the software that worked well at a transactional level, was never pleasing to use. It was hard to use. It was not pretty to look at. And we've solved that problem also with something that is iPhone gorgeous in terms of the consumer experience and its ability to solve very complex challenges. Now, the one thing we didn't talk about is generative AI. Generative AI is a $3 trillion business in the next 3 years. $1 trillion of that is enterprise in its orientation. So we think we're participating as the first mover in a $1 trillion enterprise business over the next 3 years. What's incredibly exciting about being the first mover is we released our Vancouver release. We always name it after a special city in the world on September 29th, last quarter, which means we only had 1 day of selling. In that 1 day of selling, we sold many multi-million dollar deals. So a lot of folks are doing commercials. A lot of folks are doing press releases. We're pushing out new product innovation that's on a price list that customers see tremendous value in because it completely changes the game. And you say, well, how does it change the game? Think of it this way. If you basically use digital transformation as a force for deflecting complexity from your workforce, if you use it as a force for good to get that 33% productivity back so people don't have to swivel chair between multiple applications, and you apply generative AI, and it's built into the platform, and it goes across the platform with domain-specific use cases, I just gave you 100% productivity improvement. So theoretically, if you have 10,000 employees, you now have 20,000 if you use the ServiceNow platform.
Take me through how that works. I'm a company. I might already be a ServiceNow customer. How do I use generative AI?
No complexity to it whatsoever. Same platform. It's just that all the things I just talked about now have use cases that are generative AI in their orientation. So, for example, if it's an employee experience using natural language models, you simply have a situation where the employee can interface with the platform to get whatever information they want at the speed of thought using natural language, just like you would on the internet. Voice is fine. And best of all, most problems that get solved in the enterprise between employees are what I would call cases. And those cases exist in multiple departments at any one time. So, for example, if we're solving a sales challenge, undoubtedly finance is going to be involved, pricing is going to be involved, legal is going to be involved, sales management is going to be involved, sales operations is going to be involved. and everybody wants to solve this particular customer problem. Well, the good news is with generative AI on the ServiceNow platform, all participants can manage the same case and it can be immediately summarized using Gen AI. And there's no need to resort to email and spreadsheets and all the different channels that one might go to communicate with your colleagues across various departments. It's all done on the Now platform at breathtaking speed of Gen AI. And this can be applied also to solving customer problems. This can be applied to solving IT service problems. And there's a whole list of things that can be done for the engineers, including building new applications at the speed of light. So instead of all the setup and junior engineers that are required to get a real software developer at max productivity, they can do it simply texting to code. And these are all game changers in productivity. According to an MIT study, there's a 40% improvement utilizing Gen AI in the functions I just mentioned to you. And again, if you apply that, plus no swivel chair, plus deflecting cases using digital transformation on the ServiceNow platform, I just doubled your productivity. So if you want to take cost out, you want to improve productivity, and you want to grow your company, which is what I hear from every CEO, then ServiceNow is the Swiss Army knife of the enterprise.
So can you make that more concrete on where AI comes in? I get what the platform in general is capable of doing. The words that I caught was summary or coding assistance. Yeah. There are other companies offering that too.
So for example, case summarization, chat summarization, Now Assist on Agent Workspace, generative AI-powered virtual agent for deflection, knowledge generation, and a whole chart full of case studies. And in Germany, if you think about great companies like BASF, Bayer, Mittelstand, Nagel Group, Scheidenbachmann, Körber, Deutsche Telekom, just to name a few, we're working with all these companies on these use cases on the ServiceNow platform. And what they really like too is we have a great partnership with NVIDIA, where you're taking the GPU and the NVIDIA stack with domain-specific use cases to be lightning fast on the ServiceNow platform. Why is that especially interesting? Because with domain-specific use cases, you have less demand for GPU horsepower. You do things at a much lower cost, and you pre-configure the generative AI solution in the platform to serve all the personas across the enterprise. So we're talking lightning speed, we're talking cost avoidance, deflection of things that shouldn't be done by humans and should be done by computers, and enormous, enormous cost and productivity advantages for corporations. And another thing, you know, I was talking to Laxman, the CEO of Starbucks, to give you a real retail example. Let's just assume you're staying at the Marriott in San Francisco and there's a Starbucks across the corner. You place your order for Starbucks online. Mistakenly, it gets registered at the Starbucks across the street, but you're staying in the Marriott. So somehow you incorrectly submitted the order for your daily breakfast and coffee. The system automatically has the geo recognition of where you're standing in relation to the Starbucks counter and can immediately move your order from the Starbucks down the street right to the Marriott where you're standing. Not only do you get your coffee in the form, factor, and price you bargained for, but all the back-end reconciliation so you don't get double billed has been handled by the system in real time. And you tell the CEO something like that, the hair stands up on their back because they know that's game change. If you can connect the retail experience with the back-end systems of a company. Similarly, when companies are solving complex cases and you get that vast summarization, just think about it from a legal, a governance, a compliance, an ESG. These are massively complex systems in our companies today, in many cases are half a century old, that don't even have a shot at solving that kind of problem. And now we're bringing that to mass scale instantaneously using Gen AI. It's game change. That's what's going on.
A lot of companies get offers from a huge variety of tech companies saying, we are using AI to make your business more efficient. We see that, for example, Microsoft is trying to push more into a traditional inner company assessment kind of realm. So what is the difference that ServiceNow is taking when offering those services? What's the distinct aspect of it?
The distinct difference is we are an enterprise software platform. So there are attributes of all companies that do good things. I think you're referring to Microsoft's virtual assistant. So somebody that's working in Microsoft and Office 365 or Dynamics or undoubtedly sending a caseload to Azure is getting some benefit out of that generative AI. I'm talking about people that are using the ServiceNow platform to solve problems that have existed in the enterprise, in the realm of IT service management, all the attributes of that, the employee experience, the customer experience, and the creator. So that's ServiceNow domain specific. Having said that, we are fully integrated into Microsoft. So let's assume, for example, that I am working in Microsoft and also in ServiceNow. It's no difference to the user. We've already done the deep engineering work and it's seamless. There is no swivel chair. They're the same. And similarly, I can send a workload into Azure from the ServiceNow platform, and we can run a workload into Azure and AI ops instantaneously from ServiceNow, and it's completely seamless. So it's a great point. It's yet another example of the deep engineering work that ServiceNow has done with the best brands in the business like Microsoft.
So what I'm basically interested in is you're providing the model and the company can use it. So they can combine it with the internal data they have and it's they can choose if they do it on their cloud or if they do it on-premise.
Plus they can go outside the enterprise if they want to with ChatGPT-4 or Microsoft AI Ops. There is a SKU on the price list where they can also go outside their enterprise. But most companies, the reason that they find what I'm saying quite interesting is the early days of generative AI in the enterprise will be the enterprise using the force of the ServiceNow platform on their own data. They want to contain that. They don't want the risk associated with the open internet. They want to contain the enterprise data that they've been curating for many years now, getting into a state where they can really analyze it and action it. And now with the power of generative AI, they can use it in the way they automate and the way work flows across teams in a highly collaborative fashion to get things done much more quickly with less labor and less complexity, and therefore do it at a lower cost and a higher grain of productivity. That's what ServiceNow is doing. And yes, we pre-configure those domain-specific use cases into the platform.
With those LLMs, they come with great capabilities, but there are a couple of limitations that have not been solved so far. So for example, a company using the Salesforce platform, they know that all of the data and all of the information is directly derived from all of the data sources they provided. If I have a summary, how can I be sure if it's done by AI that there are no hallucinations in it? And I might actually make a decision based on a mistake that an LLM produced.
Well, first of all, you have to train the models with your own data. And the models get smarter the more training and the more use that the models get. That is what AI does. So again, you limit the hallucinations dramatically by using your own enterprise data. The more you train the data in these large language models, the more accurate the model becomes. Our models are already operating in the high 98 percentile in some cases, in other cases in the low 90s, and the productivity that's derived is consistent with what MIT and McKinsey said where you're getting a 40% productivity improvement per person utilizing the Gen AI models. So while nothing is perfect, it is highly rational, highly statistically accurate, and the choice is very clear. It's already performing at a much more accurate level than humans can.
Where do you see the path of ServiceNow? Under your leadership, the stock market valuation has been going up about 100%. That's pretty impressive. At the same time, I think you already targeted SAP. Also, when it comes to market capitalization, I think you're still about 50 billion behind, but that's a number that's possible to close. What's your target?
Yeah, it's about 32 behind, to be specific, but it's not a question of comparing ourselves to anybody else. I think the saying goes something like this: true nobility is not being superior to somebody else. True nobility is being superior to your prior self. So in terms of our market valuation and its progress, yes, we have much more than doubled it, but it is nowhere near what we can be. When we become the defining enterprise software company of the 21st century, I'm very confident that we will enjoy success that has never been enjoyed before, but that's not at anyone else's expense. We don't compete with the systems of record, number one, nor do we choose to replace them, number two. And our scorecard in terms of our own metrics, including shareholder value, is against our prior self, no other brand or company.
When you mentioned the word system of records, especially in Waldorf, a lot of people feel as if you're looking down on what SAP traditionally does.
Why would I look down on something I helped build?
I don't know. That's at least the notion with system of records, that you're building on top of it.
Well, that's true. I mean, if you look at the systems of record, there are many besides just SAP. And it is also true that the system of action, by definition, by structural diagram, if nothing else, resides above the systems of record. That's not to diminish their importance. There are many things that reside below the system of action, including databases and operating systems and applications. But that doesn't in any way inhibit their importance. It actually gives them relevance. Without a system of action, they would simply be departmental databases.
What are the steps that you're going to take to make ServiceNow the defining business software company?
Well, I think there's a few things. First of all, you have to have a vision. And I think the vision that we have is to be the defining enterprise software company of the 21st century. The other piece is that you have to have a purpose. Our purpose is to make the world work. And the world works with ServiceNow. So we understand our purpose, and that is absolutely to help companies in the private and the public sector be the absolute best that they can be. I believe that companies have to build a great product. In our case, it's a great platform. They have to provide an uncommonly good service. I think 99% retention rate puts us in a category of one in terms of taking care of customers. They have to have an amazing brand, great brand. We have a great brand, and our brand tells a great story through the eyes of our customers. We have to build a great team. I would put our leadership team against any other. And finally, you have to expand the ecosystem. And the ecosystem is large systems integrators in the global economy, but it's also mid and small businesses all over the world having their business tied to ServiceNow, both for enterprise computing needs, but inter-enterprise computing needs as well. I see our future really being one of a business network or a business economy that's built on ServiceNow, where no matter the industry, your partners and your customers will be trading and doing business on ServiceNow. I mean, 5 years ago, nobody would have said we would be leading a source-to-pay revolution, or we would do procure-to-pay or order-to-cash, or reinventing supply chains, or automating supply and manufacturing assembly. We're doing all these things on ServiceNow. So I think that the manner in which we can stretch our ambition is pretty limitless, especially with generative AI on this once-in-a-generation platform. So I pretty much think I kind of summed it up there. We're limitless in our possibilities.
Nach einer kurzen Unterbrechung geht es gleich weiter. Bleiben Sie dran.
Zinsen, Immobilien, Geopolitik, das Jahr der Entscheidungen. Das ist das Motto des diesjährigen Bankengipfels. Banken sehen sich gerade mit einer Vielzahl von Krisen konfrontiert. In dieser Situation sind unabhängige Information und Orientierung wichtiger denn je. Beim Bankengipfel erwarten Sie daher News und Networking sowie wertvolle Impulse von Vordenkern aus Banken und Tech. Wir freuen uns auf Sie am 4. und 5. September in Frankfurt. Mit dem Vorteilscode Bankengipfel24 erhalten Sie 15% auf den Teilnehmerpreis unter handelsblatt-bankengipfel.de.
You mentioned the partnerships that you're having. There are quite a few. For just to name one, in Germany you're closely cooperating with Celonis.
Yeah,
great. What are you actually doing?
Well, we are integrating with Celonis. Celonis is a process mining company. It's their core competency. If you look at a business process and you take an X-ray of what is broken, then you have to quickly assemble what is the kind of process roadmap, subway roadmap, if you will, of what steps one should take in refining the process. And that process, once it is determined to take a new form, then has to be automated into a workflow. Because the systems that are driving the break in process to begin with are half a century old. And that's why they're broken, not because they're not good systems. They are good systems, but they are transactional systems that were designed to function a certain way. In most cases, this is serve a specific department. But what we find in the 21st century is that work needs to be automated across departments. People work collaboratively from an end-to-end perspective in business processes to execute certain missions. The Celonis process X-ray and reorientation of what the roadmap should look like integrates into ServiceNow, and then the work flows and automates beautifully. It did not take anything away from the systems that were there 50 years ago. It just simply moved it into an orientation where people that come to work or are working virtually can act together in completing a task. It's that simple.
There were a couple of other interesting deals. For example, you bought G2K, a company focusing on retail in the past. How has the integration been going?
It's been going great. G2K obviously is reinventing retail. And once again, you can reinvent retail with AI and really understanding everything from the supply chain all the way through to when someone checks out. But everything in between is how one automates. Are you replenishing stock? Are you dealing with perishable goods? Are you automating something down to the individual shopper where you absolutely understand in a highly personalized way what their experiences are, past, present, and future, and what they like? And all of this can be automated with the power of AI and G2K for retail, but at the same time, linking it into the workflow automation market leader, ServiceNow, is what finishes the job. So it was a natural integration and something that worked beautifully. And I think between Celonis and G2K, you're asking me about two very special companies that are domiciled in Germany. And I think it also points to our passion and conviction to the world's fourth largest economy in Germany. ServiceNow intends to be a leader in the German market. And these were important stepping stones to help us get there.
Especially looking at G2K, it seems as if it's also a stepping stone to have a stronger foothold in the retail industry.
That's correct.
Does it mean that you will follow a similar path in other sectors?
We are not signaling that at this time because we're so good at building industry-specific solutions. So if you think about financial services or public sector or telco, media and entertainment and technology and so many others, life sciences, healthcare. You know, we have built all of these industry domains ourselves. In the G2K case, it was a shortcut to retail, but it was also a turbocharge into AI for retail on our platform. And it had the added benefit of being domicile in one of the most important markets in the world. So there was a lot of things that went into that. I'm not signaling that we're going to repeat G2K in other industries.
From my perspective, it's interesting that on the one hand, you have made strategic partnerships as well as purchases for certain industries. And the other thing is you have an address book with the contact details of many of the most important people in the European business world and the American business world. And you've been able to secure some very, very large deals within the last, even the last couple of months.
Right.
How has that been going? Also, thinking about the overall economic as well as political climate, that is quite challenging.
It is quite challenging. And what we've learned about ServiceNow, which is exactly what I predicted, in a challenging macro, CEOs need to take cost out. They need to improve productivity quite dramatically, especially in a highly inflationary environment. And they still need to focus on the new frontier or business model innovation. You know, what's the next play? Because boards of directors don't want to just talk about cost takeout and productivity in. They also want to talk about how you're going to run your business differently. And everybody has Gen AI on their mind. So while ServiceNow is clearly the first mover in enterprise software in Gen AI, and we have proven that we can drive productivity at a rate greater than any other company I can think of in the enterprise and do so at the lowest possible cost, I think that's pretty much the trifecta of what the market needs right now. And it's resonating with all the biggest business cards in the world, both in the public and the private sector. So yeah, I think the Rolodex is important, but it's even more important that when you show up, you prove that you can do things that are pretty extraordinary. And that's what we have done.
So you basically say that you're benefiting from an increased focus on cost cutting then?
I said that it's cost cutting, it's productivity, and it's revenue growth. It's the trifecta. It's all three. So we're agile. If your priority is taking cost out, we got you. If your priority is digital transformation and building productivity in, we got you. If your objective is to create new business model innovation with the power of Gen AI and supercharging process innovation on one super platform for this generation, we got you. And we have been facilitating those conversations either collectively or based on persona, because the head of sales is probably focused on growth. The CFO is probably focused on cost out and productivity in. The head of IT is dealing with budget constraint, except for AI, where on a year-over-year basis, they will improve from 3.5% increase to 7% increase. And that's not even enough to capture the Gen AI revolution, which is why I predict that G&A functions will have to give more of their budget to fuel Gen AI. And someone said to me the other day, well, what if somebody chooses to take a wait and see attitude or be a fast follower with Gen AI? And I said, the biggest risk an executive can take right now is to be a fast follower when it comes to Gen AI. If you don't have 20 active projects going on in your company, you're already behind.
Just at the very end, you are one of the few people that can actually take this bird's eye perspective, not only in the US, but global business with a special focus on Europe. We talked a lot about AI. There is also a lot of talk about global crises, etc. Where is the global economy heading? Where do you see us going next?
Well, I think it's been well reported that the global economy has a very, very set of challenges. You know, you got a couple of wars going on that are very serious right now. You've got the post-COVID hangover of figuring out employee productivity and really thinking through generating the most productivity from your workforce. Inflation is probably stubborn on the long tail. You have a rising interest rate environment, especially given the climate where capital for new purposes is in demand at a record clip. And at the same time, you have this incredible opportunity. And this incredible opportunity is to use information technology to solve some of the world's biggest challenges. And they, therefore, are also the world's biggest opportunities. So I think even as the global macro and the various complexities thereof challenge us, we only have one place to turn, which is to use information technology as the ultimate strategic weapon to dig the world out of these various dilemmas. And that's why I predict strongly that 24 will be a very big year for IT, very big year for tech investment, especially Gen AI. And it'll also be a year where platforms define the enterprise. We are moving away from 1,000 points of dim light where everybody has an app for everything. The truth is, nobody wants every app. What they want is a few platforms. It's about 5 of them, maybe 6 in total, in enterprise software that actually matter. The others are just either on the sidelines because they're there, or others are small, and they used to be far more relevant with point solutions to different people within an enterprise. But I think the big business cards at the top are saying, don't do that anymore, because you might be optimizing for your own self-interest, but you're slowing down the company and its totality. So I think it's going to be a great year to be ServiceNow, a great year to be a Gen AI leader, a great year to be expanding your global interests, and a great year to be introducing net new innovation at the pace we are. You know, this year so far, we put out 5,000 net new developments on our platform, which pretty much is an uncommon achievement in the industry, and with several thousand more to go before the year end, including Gen AI at a clip that's never been done before, and a pipeline that basically says the global economy wants ServiceNow. So ServiceNow wants the global economy as well.
Bill, thank you so much. That has been very interesting.
Thank you very much, Stefan. Appreciate being with you. Thank you.
Und damit sind wir auch schon wieder am Ende von Handelsblatt Disrupt. Wie immer freue ich mich über Kommentare in der Handelsblatt Disrupt LinkedIn-Gruppe oder senden Sie mir gerne eine Mail. Die Details finden Sie in den Shownotes. Danke an dieser Stelle auch für die Unterstützung von Lukas Teppler und Regina Körner und Migo Fecke von professionalpodcast.com, dem Dienstleister für Strategieberatung und Podcastproduktion. Wir hören uns dann nächste Woche Freitag wieder. Bis dahin wünsche ich Ihnen interessante digitale, aber natürlich auch analoge Zeiten. Ihr Sebastian Mattes.
Die deutsche Wirtschaft steht vor neuen Herausforderungen. Und Sie möchten aktiv die Zukunft mitgestalten? Dann sind Sie beim Handelsblatt CFO Summit 2024 genau richtig. Erleben Sie hochkarätige Speaker und CFOs renommierter Unternehmen wie Amazon, Google oder SAP. Seien Sie Teil dieses exklusiven Gipfeltreffens am 11. und 12. Juni in Düsseldorf. Mit dem Code PODCAST sparen Sie bei der Anmeldung 15%. Alle weiteren Infos unter handelsblatt-cfo-summit.de.